Oh my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh Jesus, please be a plane. Oh please. Are you ready for this?
Cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular disc.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that it ain't like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame, fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, these certainly are strange days indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to those of you listening here in Toronto and in Montreal, around the world on the web via the live stream, and to you wherever you are via the podcast, to program 395. Wherever you're listening, we'd like to hear from you. You can email us at sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Tonight, Dave Frelott with his take on it, an update on the March 4th, 2004 Mexican FLIR UFO footage from Mexican UFO researcher investigator Santiago Ituria Garza. And as usual, biweekly contributing editor Alfred Lindberg takes us home in the fourth quarter. UFO investigator Barb Campbell, who runs the Northwest Saskatchewan Research Center in Maidstone, Saskatchewan, along with CBC radio and television people, drove to the northern native reserve of Waterhen Lake in Saskatchewan, where strange lights had been spotted since the 1890s, and where there have recently been vivid reports of unidentified flying objects. They were at Waterhen Lake, which is about a four-hour drive north of Prince Albert, to interview night watchman Kenny LaPratt, who told them he was on duty the night of April 4th this year when he saw several objects over Waterhen Lake. Here's how Kenny described what he saw to the CBC reporters.
I saw them with binoculars very close. I saw them land on the lake right here. And then I was talking to my mom, and the next second they were flying about a meter above the lake, and they were moving at such an incredible rate. When I turned and looked at her, they were already way at that tree line over there, and they all stopped. And they started going up. One would go up, and then another one would come up behind it. I just panicked. I got scared. I didn't know what to do. I was freaking out. I said, I got to tell somebody. I called the cops. I told them, there's something flying in the sky. There's something flying in the sky. You guys should send somebody out here to Air Force or somebody, you know, like... because I was scared. As soon as I was done being scared, I was really happy because I know I believe, you know, like, I could never believe it until I saw it. Like, a lot of people say we're close to the Canadian Air Base, but there is no way that they could have built and designed these things, man. No way. I don't think so. You had to be pretty gifted and pretty intelligent to have something like that. Yeah, and they move really fast, so. So I've seen jets fly over here at a great amount of speed, but these things were moving, like, 10 times faster. And they were, like, all over in the bush back there, coming up all over, you know, like, moving around back there. I don't know why they chose that place. They should have come landed over here or come seen us, but kind of strange me out.
Strange them out. Strange days indeed, eh, Kenny? Our thanks to the CBC for that excerpt from their reports. Kenny LaPratt also told the CBC radio reporter that the objects were as big as houses, and that as he looked at them with his binoculars, he could see orange glows coming through the windows around the objects. Now, where have we heard those kinds of reports before? Barb Campbell and the CBC News crew were also shown video shot by Julia Bouvier Mustafa Cat of What Can He Saw, which you too can see by going to virtuallystrange.net and clicking on the news and info link in tonight's program listing. And the program, of course, is Strange Days Indeed. And you can listen to CBC Radio Saskatchewan's report there too. Barb Campbell told George Filer's files that out of the approximately 1,600 people who live on the reserve at Water Hen Lake, 75% of them have seen strange lights and discs, along with two Royal Canadian Mounted Police officers who also saw strange things there, to clarify. Yes, an interesting time happening there. Since the 1890s, they've been having strange incidents in the sky and on the ground and on the water. Yeah. An email sent to the UFO updates list on Thursday of this week from Richard Hall. Quite a few recent posts, Richard says, have raised questions about important or classic UFO cases of the past from an extremely naive and uninformed viewpoint. Like reinventing the wheel or being doomed to repeat the mistakes of history because of not studying the historical record. Richard Hall says he began publishing the Journal of UFO History 2+ years ago, but not all that many people seem to be interested compared to those who dote on Area 51, animal mutilations, the Bermuda Triangle, Roswell, and all those other sensational, folkloric, and highly speculative aspects, often having no real-world connection with the UFO mystery at all. Richard Hall says, subscribe and learn, folks. There's a world of information out there that you need to bone up on. Check out Larry W. Bryant's review of the UFO, of the Journal of UFO History in the June 2006 issue of UFO Magazine. Larry is a charter subscriber. He and I, as in Richard Hall, disagree on exopolitics, so I particularly appreciate his praise of the journal. Above all, I like his comment that due to my previous published columns for MUFON and UFO Magazine, we all know and appreciate Dick's persona as a walking Swiss Army knife, able to cut through mountains of ufological BS within a millisecond. That, i.e., my long experience and extensive knowledge of the UFO field, is what has informed my quick dismissal of the Condyne report from the British Ministry of Defense a few weeks ago. Not some sort of arrogance or superiority complex, as some relatively new people seem to think. Despite our desires and wishful thinking, Richard Hall says, there is no simple, glib, 100% accurate interpretation of what's going on and what it all means. One needs to gather and study data carefully. Consider the views of knowledgeable and experienced people, and always be willing to reconsider on the basis of new evidence. But if you ignore the investigations by skilled and competent people that have gone before, you are being arrogant and dismissive. Richard Hall to UFO Updates this week. And if you go to tonight's program listings, actually the 2006 program listings, you will see a link there, the UFO Journal of History. Click that if you'd like to subscribe. Richard Hall always writes mean stuff. And if you see the picture of Alfred Lemberg on top of it holding Richard's book, that'll give you even more of an idea. There are several clickable links on the Alfred Lemberg picture. Coming up is Dave Ferlott with this week's take on it.
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Ferlott.
Dave's List. And the thread is entitled Jesse Marcel Jr. On and Off the Record. For those of you who do not know who Jesse Marcel Jr. is, he is the son of Major Jesse Marcel, the intelligence officer that investigated the incident on the Brazil Ranch near Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. Now, what is most interesting about this thread is that It actually evolved into a debate between Stanton Friedman and Eugene Frisson about Roswell and MJ-12. But one thing that actually came up during the debate that caught my interest was a comment about people having absolutely no interest in UFOs and aliens and just brushing off the entire concept as being silly and not worthy of any effort by them to learn anything about it. Now, that concept is not new to me. I have friends and family who have no interest in UFOs and anything to do with them other than they enjoy some of the science fiction entertainment in the form of Star Trek or Star Wars movies. No interest in UFOs or ETs is basically akin to burying your head in the sand and believing in the old adage that ignorance is bliss. The problem that I have with this is that we have an unending plethora of evidence that UFOs and ETs are anything but benign. And if they're simply ignored, they will not just go away. In fact, quite the opposite. I suspect they will become bolder in some of the things they do. Now, let me put this in perspective for you. We have reports that UFOs have been responsible for shutting down nuclear missile bases. They've been chased by fighter aircraft and either eluded them completely or the aircraft ended up crashing mysteriously or even disappearing completely. We have reports from thousands of people that they have been taken aboard UFOs without their consent. Reports pour in that seemingly link UFOs and ETs with the mutilation of animals, especially domestic animals. And the list goes on with examples of how UFOs and ETs do things on this planet that simply should not be ignored. The concept of ignoring something in the hope that ignorance is bliss, and if we ignore it long enough, it'll go away, is not new to us humans. We've done it for thousands of years. We ignored Nazism and the resultant millions of people slaughtered, providing new testimony that ignorance is not bliss. We ignored the invasion of North America, and once again, it resulted in the loss of millions of lives and the eventual extinction of people and animals that were native to this soil. We ignored the need for hygiene, and the European continent paid the price with the Black Plague. We ignored the concept of religious expansionism and suffered through centuries of the Spanish Inquisition. All of those things began with rumors and stories voiced by people who were trying to wake up the general population to the threat, but all their cries fell on deaf ears that were unwilling to hear, eyes that were unwilling to see, until finally the proof emerged that could not be denied. And I know that many of those who ignored the threats died as a result of them. Now, I'm not saying that all UFOs and ETs visiting this planet are bent on our destruction or are an immediate threat to us, but there are considerable reports that show that not all the ETs and UFOs that are coming around are just having a look around, because some of them are doing things that are downright hostile. And if it were a recognizable country from this planet doing the same things, well, we'd be involved in a state of war. We cannot afford the luxury of ignoring UFOs and ETs. If we do the same thing with UFOs and ETs as we have done with other events in our past, I fear that we will be counting the millions of bodies while finally accepting the truth that UFOs and ETs are real and coming to this planet. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Yes, millions of bodies, eh, Dave?
I think so. It's possible.
I think so. You're wearing your cheerful hat tonight, huh?
What can I say?
Well, yeah, there seem to be a lot of people thinking the same way, though, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things. Again,
our
like
benign space brothers.
Yeah, they're not that benign, you know.
I hear.
So it's like, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not saying all of them are of that bent, mm-hmm. but it definitely would seem that some of them are.
Mm.
And we can't just ignore them.
And,
yep. You know, we can't just sort of go, oh, yeah, UFOs. Yeah, right. Don't worry about it.
Hmm.
It's like, no. We do have to worry about it because it may smack us in the head one day.
Well, that's the way I keep saying it, you know, is I want to know what the answer is, but I may not like the answer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, isn't that a scene from Independence Day that we're conjuring up for people?
Well, I hope it never comes to that. That's what I'm afraid of, is that... That would be the proof. You
well,
know?
Perhaps those that know are also concerned about that, too.
Yeah, well, I think it'd be kind of nice if they kind of told us.
They don't want to start a panic. They don't want to disrupt the world religions. they've been covering it up for so long, they wouldn't know where to begin, I guess.
Yeah, that's true, too. Mm. Yeah, where do we start? Okay, folks, everything you know about UFOs or what you think you know, pretty well it's all true.
Oh.
Sort of like that line out of Independence Day. Well, Mr. President, that isn't quite true.
Mm.
I love that.
Yeah, and maybe we should play that clip again at some point this evening, just for you, Dave.
Oh, thank you.
Well,
I appreciate it.
I'm sure you will. And I appreciate you being here.
Hey, no problem, bud.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, Dave Frelott.
Good night.
As far as I know, an alien spacecraft did not crash in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947.
Excuse me, Mr. President. That's not entirely accurate.
Strange days, indeed.
Back on the 11th of May in 2004, Scott Corrales sent the UFO updates email list a news release, basically, in an unprecedented move for this country. He's referring to Mexico and perhaps the whole world. Military authorities have made public a video showing 11 unidentified flying objects captured by an aircraft belonging to the Secretariat of National Defense, SEDENA. This video will be presented today, that was the 11th of May 2004, by journalist and UFO researcher Jaime Masson. In an exclusive interview with La Prensa newspaper, Masson stated that the Secretary of National Defense himself, Ricardo Clemente Vega Garcia, authorized the broadcast of the material to both domestic and foreign news media. According to the researcher, the encounter occurred on May 5th, on March the 5th, when an aircraft belonging to the Mexican Air Force, a Merlin C-26A, was engaged in drug interdiction patrols, and at around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, it detected the presence of 11 objects following it. Well, there's been all kinds of discussion and conjecture in the UFO field in the ensuing months, and a lot of it pro, a lot of it con, and it lay there dormant for a while. Nobody discussed it for many months, until yesterday, when our guest this hour, Santiago Ituria Garza, posted a message to the UFO Updates email list, which made several heads snap upward, and an interesting email it proved to be. I was fortunate enough this morning to get hold of Santiago, and he joins us on the line from Mexico. Good evening, Santiago.
Hello, Errol. Thank you for the calling. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you on. An interesting story, this. As I said moments ago, there was a lot of enthusiastic discussion for and against And then it got very quiet as far as the public's concerned. Perhaps we can go back to March the 5th, and for those people who have no idea what it is that we're going to be talking about in the next hour, let's go over a little bit of the history of this case, Santiago.
Yes, of course. This was one of our most important goals in our UFO research here in Mexico for the civilian UFO research, because this incident that took place on March 5, as you mentioned, March 5, 2004, over the Campeche aerial space, where a airplane of the Air Force, Mexican Air Force, a C-26A was doing this routinary surveillance flight as part of their programs, anti-drug programs, operations that they continuously perform over the South Mexico aerial space. And suddenly, in that afternoon, they encounter a unique and unprecedented, unexplained phenomena in which the 8 members of the crew were involved in a very dramatic experience in which they confronted suddenly a formation of 11 unknown objects, luminous objects, that suddenly even surrounded the airplane. This was a very intense and dramatic situation for them that took them by surprise. And they were in the middle of this flight, as I mentioned, trying to locate some drug smuggling airplanes, you know, that come from South America. But suddenly they noticed on the radar an unknown target, an unknown object, that was getting near, getting close to the airplane. They thought that this was this could be one of those smuggling planes, you know, with traffic and with drugs. And they made some kind of observation at certain distance, but then this object seemed to go away. So they decided to come back, to return to the base. And suddenly, to their surprise, the object began following them. And that's when the action began with so much intensity that they were very surprised. How was it possible that this object was following them? So they began wondering what could this would be the meaning of this strange behavior. So they began watching again very closely this object that was following them, and suddenly more objects appeared and were detected first by the radar and then by the FLIR camera. The FLIR camera is an infrared camera that these military airplanes have just to detect precisely under infrared conditions and also under normal conditions. Suspicious airplanes that carry drugs, etc., as well as suspicious runways on land, etc. So this field camera records on infrared mode. So suddenly the field operator began to realize that other objects began appearing on the screen. First it was 2, then 3, and then 11 objects. So the situation turned very dramatic, for especially for the captain and commander in chief of this plane, because on one side there were several lights, several UFOs or several unknown objects. On the left side there were more. And suddenly they were all surrounded at a certain moment. Now, there was a very surprising issue here, surprising situation, because they were trying to have visual contact visual contact of the objects, of course, as part of the operation, you know. But at any time, they were not visible, these objects, by them. I mean, the objects were invisible to the human eye. However, the FLIR camera and the radar was detecting these objects very close to the airplane, surrounding the airplane. So this was a very strange, rare situation, because the whole crew never had a visual contact with the objects. This encounter lasted for about 20 minutes, in which these objects, as I said, at what time they surrounded the airplane, and it was very lucky that the FLIR camera was recording the whole incident since it started. And then, of course, the communication among them, they were, of course, excited, they were surprised, they were concerned. They were also in contact with the base in land, and near Ciudad del Carmen. And there was a certain time when the captain of the airplane, Mayor Magdaleno Jasso, turned off the plane lights. Turn off the plane lights. Why did he perform this this procedure? Well, according to his testimonial, he decided to turn off the lights of the plane to see if there was some response from the lights. Very strange reaction, but very interesting also. So I must say that this was a fortunate incident, because at any time there were no aggression, there was not any attack, there was not any damage to regret, there was not any negative or aggression act. And
Santiago, I need to interrupt you here for a couple of reasons. First of all, to explain forward-looking infrared, which is the camera system that they had on board, recording to videotape. And those of you who've watched the various cop shows on television will know exactly what forward-looking infrared is. It detects heat from objects, from people, from bodies. So a lot of the police forces in the United States use them to chase suspects. Well, police forces around the world mounted on a helicopter, they can see people at night with these things. On the line from his home in Mexico is Santiago Ituria Garza. We're talking about the March 5th, 2004 Mexican Air Force. Pretty amazing encounter out there at Campeche airspace, out over the Gulf of Mexico. So, Santiago, the crew gets back to base. They tell their story. They hand over the videotape. They hand over the radar recordings, the audio recordings of the crew. And then what?
Yes, Earl. Well, of course, this was an unprecedented incident, an unprecedented situation for them.
Yes.
We must keep in mind that these missions of the Mexican Air Force over the Campeche airspace and over all South Mexico are permanent missions, permanent operations of as part of their continuous program against drug trafficking, smuggling drugs, and they have been performing these flights continuously. So, but this was the first time that they encountered this phenomena, that they had this strange encounter with this unknown luminous objects that were also invisible to the human eye. So that was a very important and transcendental incident that they recorded with the FLIR camera, with the infrared camera. So what happened was that when they returned to the base, they made some debriefing to the major officers of the Air Force. And, well, everybody was surprised by this incident, and, of course, there was a certain concern about, of course, the security of their missions, if this could be some kind of threat, not only to national security, but also to their missions of their anti-drug programs, because this presence, a known presence, could in some way compromise or could be some kind of a menace to their programs, anti-drug programs. So they decided to present a complete debriefing to the Secretary of Defense. That was a high level of relevance that they decided that should take the step and present the whole incident, including the images, to the Secretary of Defense and also to the Secretary, to the Department of Defense office officers. So what resulted was that they decided to conduct an investigation, a secret, a private investigation by their own, that followed with that same month in March and part of April.
Our guest, Santiago Ituria Garza. He's here filling us in on some of the history before we get to the update on the March 2004 Mexican Air Force FLIR, or forward-looking infrared UFO case. The guys on a drug interdiction flight with the Mexican Air Force spotted via radar initially, and then on the FLIR video camera, 11 objects around their aircraft. Couldn't see them with the naked eye. Some sort of cloaking device, perhaps? Well, they landed. They were debriefed by the officers at their Air Force base, and the reports were passed on up the line, right on up into the Department of Defense down there in Mexico. Santiago, what happened then?
Yes, Earl. Well, they were more than 11 objects. 11 objects were detected by the FLIR camera to the left side of the airplane. But three more objects were detected by the radar, one at the front and two to the right side. So there were 14 objects that in a certain time surrounded the airplane, as I mentioned. So this was a very unprecedented situation that took notice the Secretary of Defense, and all of them consider this of high relevance, since, as I said before, several perspectives could be awakened here. First of all, they have some concern, of course, about national security. And, of course, also, as I said, some concerns about the safety of their operations and the South Mexico, programs to anti-drug programs, and also some concerns about the safety of the commercial airline traffic, of course, several ideas, several concerns. So they decided... the Secretary of Defense to conduct an immediate investigation with the Department of Defense involvement. And the following days, those missions by the Air Force airplanes on the same area, Campeche Aerospace, and also on other areas of South Mexico, were instructed to be alerted all the time and record all the flight incidences just in case those unknown luminous objects could appear again. And, of course, try to get as much data as possible for their investigation. They were very interested at the same time. However, those mysterious lights never appear again. So they just have, of course, the testimonials of the crew, the FLIR footage, and they were wondering several possibilities here. They were have several possibilities. They, of course, don't have any explanation at that moment. They consider the option, yes, that this could be some kind of a new technology of some kind of new kind of airplanes from some foreign government, yes, but very remote, but it was considered, yes. The truth is that they were with no clues about this incident, and since the incident has not been repeated again in the following days and the next month, well, they were concerned how this will in some way compromise the national security and all the other issues.
Mm-hmm.
So Secretary of Defense General Ricardo Vega took one historical decision. He decided to open the doors and invite the civilian UFO research and to the personality of Jaime Maussan. Now, many people may wonder and still wonder why a Secretary of Defense of a country suddenly decides to open their doors and not only acknowledge that there is a phenomenon involving UFOs or unidentified flying objects with unknown technology, but also to share their experiences, their files, or their database with the civilian UFO research. Well, I think the answer is very simple. Their interest was very legitimate. The military were interested in this phenomena, not since this incident from March 5, but since the beginning of the intense UFO wave that we have been witnessing in our Mexico since 1992. Of course, they did not appear in public. They did not come forward acknowledging the phenomena. They just stay with no comments. They didn't make any appearance. But they were following every report and every evidence. They were following because they were interested also in this phenomena and this technology. Now that they have their own experience, Secretary of Defense decided to call Jaime Maussan. Why Jaime Maussan? Well, because Jaime Maussan is a very well-known researcher, journalist, with so many experience and has a very respected research team in which I'm a part of this team. So they decided to invite Jaime Maussan on the research team as a very in a very personal request for some kind of advice, taking in account, of course, their experience, our experience in all our research work. And that's why that historic meeting took place. That's why how we knew about that incident. Of course, Jaime and I, because Jaime and I were in communication almost daily at those days, and we didn't knew what was the purpose of this meeting. Finally, when the Secretary of Defense and all the officials told him about the incident, showed him the images, and the crew gave their testimonies, we knew that the military, the Air Force, has an experience of their own, and they were willing to share with the civilian research. But not only that, the Secretary of Defense make a more relevant decision, and he authorized Jaime Maussan to go public with this case to the Mexican public, the Mexican people, and that was what made this decision and this case so historical, so important, that I think that made history and also provoked similar responses from other air forces in other countries like Brazil.
Yes.
The following month, that also the Brazilian Air Force opened the doors to the civilian research in Brazil, as you know.
So, Santiago, we have about, about 8 minutes left, and we need to sort of get to the point of this. Basically, what happened after that footage went public, and we had Jaime and yourself and other people on this program talking about the footage and listening to the voices of the crew as they gradually got a little spooked by what was going on around them. And subsequent discussion on the UFO updates list about that footage was mostly positive, but there were one or two people, including a Mexican commercial airline pilot, who suggested that what the FLIR camera saw was the burn-off from oil wells out in the ocean down below. And it was suggested that perhaps the Mexican Air Force could fly exactly back along that path that they flew that day on March 5th, 2004, and take another look to see if those flames from the burn-off from the oil platforms down in the ocean could be seen on that subsequent pass. That didn't happen officially, did it?
Yes, of course not. This was just a speculation by this guy who has a personal motive, not against the Air Force, the Mexican Air Force, but against Jaime Maussan. He's just a debunker that has been exposed many times here in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But then let's just say that flight of March 5, 2004 of the Mexican Air Force was not the only flight over that aerial space. There was many flights before and many flights after. And in any time, there was a similar phenomenon registered by the FLIR camera. Those mysterious lights never appear again, not before, not after. So that is very simple explanation. I mean, it's a matter of a common sense. It's a matter of logic. If the FLIR camera just detected some oil flames, field flames in the ocean, well, of course, any plane will detect these oil fields again and again and again. There is no way out about that. But the phenomena was not replicated a single time since March 5, 2004.
Hundreds of flights by the Mexican Air Force along that same flight path.
But there are other issues that this guy ignored, for example, the radar readings. And so many, for instance, the moments when the airplane was surrounded by the lights, and some lights get near almost 2 miles close to the airplane. And many, many others that we have been, as you know, publishing in the results of our investigation, in the updates, and including the interviews with the crew, the interviews with the FLIR representative. And the case still remains unexplained for the Mexican Air Force and also for the majority of the researchers here in Mexico and also in other countries. And let's just say that this case that we know as the Serena case, the Campeche case, has been a perfect example of a democratic opening for a Department of Defense of the country that could be followed by other countries without any hesitation or without any fear of a massive panic or something. As a matter of fact, I can say that just in December of last year, the Peruvian Air Force also had a very big opening, and they invited Jaime Maussan to a special meeting to see and to review the Campeche case, the Campeche footage, the Campeche interviews, because they were very interested in the attitude of the Mexican Air Force and the attitude of the Department of Defense, and they wanted to know more information. This happened on December of last year, and the commander-in-chief, Julio Cesar Chamorro, who is the Peruvian director of the Aerial Anomalous Phenomena Research Agency of the Air Force, he and his experts in FLIR cameras, because they have airplanes with FLIR cameras also equipped, and they say that they review the footage of the Mexican Air Force, and the footage is authentic, is not a bad alignment, bad calibration like this guy insisted. And this was a very important testimonial, because of course they are the Peruvian Air Force officers that now had also opened the doors to the Peruvian researchers several.
It did, as you said earlier, it opened up a lot of doorways down in the South Americas with the Brazilian military coming out and saying that they had been studying that amazing case down there in the Amazon Basin.
Yes.
And where they were being seen, there were local population were injured by beings from strange objects. So gradually there seems to be an opening up in certain countries of the fact that there are UFOs in their airspaces, and those governments have been admitting it. Santiago, we're out of time, I'm afraid. It was good talking with you again, and please, you know, keep us updated on what comes out of this Mexican Air Force case.
Yes.
And we look forward to talking to you again really soon.
Yes, okay. Thank you for the invitation, Errol. It was a pleasure. And finally, I just want to say that let's keep in mind that the real issue in this and all these stories is, of course, the attitude, the paper that the what the Mexican Air Force, the Department of Defense, has decided to open their doors. That's the real issue. The footage is just, you know, an instrument.
Yes.
It was just an evidence. But the really importance of all these all these incidents are the historical changes in all those military institutions that we sincerely hope that will be followed by other countries as well.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Santiago. Good night. Buenas noches.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye. Amazing stuff, and still that case continues. Every second week at this time, we head down to Alabama with a banjo on his knee. Alfred Lemberg, our contributing editor down there, joins us. Good evening, Mr. Lemberg.
Why, I think that would be I.
That would indeed be thou.
They're on and they're in.
So we went from the seriousness of the Mexican Air Force down to Alabama and degenerated into silliness. Good evening, Alfred.
You know, well, I'll tell you what there, partner. It's going to do that.
Yes.
When, I mean, you were going to descend to silliness. You were going to whistle past the graveyard when given the kind of report that you've been given this evening, vis-a-vis Dave Furlott and Mr. Garza.
Yes, and the CBC report out of Saskatchewan was interesting too.
Oh yeah, the Waterhead Lake thing.
Yes.
Actually, very interesting. You know, given that Canada has had and has always had apparently their own Martha lights.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd never heard of them before.
Well, they're not. I mean, this guy, Kenny LaPrat, was not describing Marfa lights. He was describing physical objects in which he could see windows and glowing orange light emanating. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very strange. And you put that together, that little report together, with some of the stuff that Dave Furlott was talking about regarding Jesse Marcel. Seriously, you know, when you think in terms of some of the history of what's been going on, and Dave Furlott remarked about some of that, talking about nuclear installations, that nuclear missile installations that are shut down and otherwise hazarded, and here we have this, you know, which was an 8 or 10 year old boy talking about Jesse Marcel now, the son of Jesse Marcel Sr., the top kick intelligence officer for the only atomic bomb wing in the United States Air Force. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say that's pretty high speed, wouldn't you?
Yes.
So at any rate, the other stuff that he was talking about, we're just talking about a lot of strange stuff. And then you throw that, you throw on top of that Jesse Marcel, who is a full colonel, a doctor, a flight surgeon, and by all reports here, you know, pretty much of a war hero for enduring the tragedy that's going on in Iraq right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And given his age too, which is fairly remarkable, when you consider he was even, you know, if he was 10 in 1947, well, you figure it out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's.
Somebody please do the math for me. I'm left-handed.
Okay, so we go from 1947 to 57. That's 10 years. 67, 20. 77, 87, 97. So he's got to be in his 70s.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about a man of significant years, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine somebody that doesn't want to be trifled with, someone that wants to be taken seriously. I think probably someone that demands to be taken seriously, as is his right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he was an 8 to 10 year old child when all this occurred, and it's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
That the attitudes that can be taken by individuals who want to make this whole study go away and not give it the look and the attention that it deserves, and that somebody like Richard Hall can talk very eloquently and write very eloquently about, I think.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Jesse Marcel the second, because there is a third now.
Is there?
Yes, there is, his son. But Jesse Marcel Jr., as he's being called, Colonel Jess Marcel, has a book coming out in the next couple of weeks, and I've dropped a few words in friendly ears about the possibility of Colonel Marcel coming on this program and talking about Roswell from his perspective, which is what the book is about.
Well, I certainly hope that comes to pass.
I hope so, too.
That would be a very interesting program.
Yes. Otherwise, I'm screwed for a guest next week.
Hey, well, that's no problem, Errol. You and I will just do the whole show.
Oh, yes. Yes, we could do that, couldn't we? And
I think we could do it easily.
One day, we shall indeed do that. Except next week, Wayne is rehearsing yet another version of Hair next week. Did you hear Wayne St. John last week?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Interesting story, David's story, the kid who grew up basically surrounded by strange beings.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that happened in this burg right around the corner from where I used to live, where I had my Whitley Strieber experiences on television, which is what got me back into this again after many years.
Yeah.
Mm. Hmm.
You know, perhaps someday that story can be told.
Well, it's a relatively simple story. I was living in a townhouse, the top of a townhouse. I woke up at, 3 o'clock in the morning, feeling the urge to go downstairs and turn on the TV, fire up a VCR, which I did, somewhat bemused because I didn't know why I was doing it. And as the TV came to life, it was on CNN, and the anchor was saying, and when we come back, an author of a new book called Communion, Whitley Strieber, will join us. He's had some amazing alien experiences. And there it was. And from that, I grabbed that first interview that I was aware of, and then subsequently, every time he was on TV plugging his book, I would be dragged to the TV and hop into the channel, and there it was, the start of the segment. It just completely knocked me out.
Mm-hmm. that sounds like a real serendipity of synchronicity.
Well, yeah, it sounds much more like being ordered to do so. And that videotape still exists. I must have picked up nine or ten segments on various networks.
Well, still, you could have resisted it probably if you wanted to.
Well, no, but, I mean, the first one got me hooked, and then every time, here comes that urge again. And I went willingly, you know, to go and grab it.
Well, I'll tell you, Terrence McKenna didn't entirely upend his nose at Whitley Strieber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something going on at the base of Whitley that I think is passing strange.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and whether that's actually Whitley himself or or the things that have gone on around him, I don't know.
Well, who's to say?
He's a compelling speaker. There's no doubt about it. He puts his words together beautifully. He tells glorious stories, has written some really interesting fantasy books, and a couple or three interesting UFO abduction-related books, too.
And he's also one of those people who hasn't entirely disgraced themselves over the years.
No, not at all. Very eloquent man.
Yeah.
Yeah, who continues to this day doing the work.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's important, too, and I'm glad there are select people, you know, continuing to do the work for all of the... But I'll tell you, because there is a significant impetus, effort, mechanism to keep this stuff undercover, to keep it under wraps, to keep from talking about it, It's a little bit disappointing, you know, when somebody like Richard Hall can't, get the attention that he very definitely deserves and has earned over the years. And others certainly in that caliber looking instead at the people who have made their names and made their reputations and I think made a significant amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Profiting on skeptobunkerism and shooting these people down generally not having a look, and it's very upsetting, very disappointing, but I'll tell you, it's not going away. It seems to me to be getting bigger every month, and man, I'm right here to help fan the fire.
Alfred Lindbergh, we triggered something that you wanted to talk about.
Well, it was struck up actually by what you and Dave Frelott were talking about this evening, and he indicated that perhaps maybe our authorities, our governments, our persons elected and non-elected, who we put in charge of taking care of things for us while we're making a living, that he really thought that these folks ought to be a little more forthcoming. And with respect to you now, you kind of launched into the culture would be threatened angle, that religions would have some problems and governments and cultures and people and economies.
That was actually with tongue firmly planted in cheek, but because it's radio, you can't see that. But
I'm happy to hear that. Happy to hear that. At any rate, the point is that I think the Matrix films did nothing at all if they didn't kind of demonstrate to us that reality is preferable in all cases to whatever the hokum would be, world that is manufactured for us that is not real. And the point is, and I think you're there, probably, I've known you for years, I think you are, I think Dave is there, I mean, he made every admission of it, okay, that, I want to know, and as far as not liking the answer, well, you say religion has problems, government has problems, culture. Hey, all that just goes away. Religions are already disrupted. Governments are already in turmoil, okay? Culture's already not our friend. People are already terrified. Economies are already holding their breaths. Maybe there was some kind of admission by the authorities that UFOs were actually visiting us in one fashion or another, that a lot of this BS that I just relayed to you might stop. What are your comments on that, Errol?
I haven't got the faintest idea. You know, I've been around this for far too long now, and I don't know. One day I feel that information is being withheld. The other day, you know, and the next day I'm not so sure. The third day I am totally convinced that somebody out there knows a lot of stuff they ain't talking about. And
well, that's what all the evidence says. Isn't it, though?
And as for, you know, the world coming apart, well, you nailed it. It's all coming apart regardless of whether they fess
right.
up or not.
Folks, yeah. I mean, let's embrace the free energy and the aliens from the stars who are going to come down here and square all this stuff away for us.
Yeah. Our space brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did
you finish?
Well, sure, I'm always done.
Oh, no, because a very nice woman sent me a picture today, a photograph of Palladian scout ship shot with Canon SD-100 camera, April 26, 2006, at 5:10 Philippines time from a 25th floor apartment in Makati, Manila. And she says, based on the relative size of the vehicles in the street below, the craft appears to be one of the nimble 7-meter runabouts or beam ships, as Billy Meyer described them. This can be taken as further evidence that mankind stands at the threshold of cosmic brotherhood, with delays subject only to our own demonstrations of goodness and willingness to enjoy our cosmic connection. I have a great deal of difficulty with people who, you know, make assumptions about what it is that they see, and it's our cosmic space brothers, you know?
Well, you certainly can't make any assumptions, but just as you can't assume that they're cosmic space brothers, you can't assume that they're down here to eat our heads either.
Well, I wasn't assuming that.
Certainly not.
You know, I usually like to sit on the fence about most things. Yeah, there are a couple of things that tick me off, and I will say so.
Oh, not me. I like to jump down on the other side and stomp around making crop circles.
God, you're as weird as I am.
Well, I aspire to it. It's important to me to get there. And like I was writing the guy today, it's, you know, like I'm pushing 60 years old and I've already had two strokes. I can't tolerate a whole bunch more of itinerant BS, you know.
Mm.
Can't tolerate it. No time.
Well, I think it calls for a much depth in meditation and much yoga on your part.
Or hoisting the black flag and start cutting throats, literary throats.
Yeah,
of course.
Or going and seeing a shrink and getting a lot of downers, it seems to me.
Well, I don't know. I guess I'm just not a downer kind of guy.
Well, it's your choice, isn't it? Yeah.
True. Mm-hmm. But you know, like I think I'm sincere in my beliefs and
absolutely, and that's why you're on this program every 2 weeks.
You know, real quick, I'd like to say something about Mr. Garza's effort, if we have some time.
Of course. Yes, Santiago Ituria. Yes, we have just under 2 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a very passing, strange thing, a very peculiar thing, not significantly debunked by any stretch of the imagination. When it's all said and done, there were strange lights out there that have not been seen before or since,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's significant, you
yes.
know, right there by itself. I think that when you put something together like what Mr. Garza has put together here, with what Wendy Connors is talking about on her latest compilation that I'm going to have to spend some time on one of these programs talking about,
mm-hmm.
but with what Dave Frelock was talking about earlier vis-a-vis Jesse Marcel and, you know, silly UFOs, you know, put big quotes around that.
Mm.
You know, I have to make mention that he used the word and he said unending plethora.
Unending plethora, yes.
Yes, I became aroused. anyway, you know, back to Mr. Garza.
This is leading really nicely into the just after the 11 o'clock news program.
Oh, Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, let's say no more about that.
Okay.
But you know, vis-a-vis what Furlot and Connors are talking about there,
mm-hmm.
and put together with all of that, it just gets weirder and weirder. And down in Mexico in 1994, we were talking about pilots operating within the standards of their training programs,
mm-hmm.
and I'm an individual that has had some small experience designing
yes.
military aviation programs.
Slight,
and
slight correction, 2004.
What did I say?
94.
Oh, well. You know,
I don't want to confuse the listeners. There, go.
But, you know, with regard to those pilots operating within their standards and the limitations of their training and not blowing it and not panicking and remaining professional, you know, I mean, I'm here to tell you as a professional aviator in my own right who designed these programs, not these programs specifically, but military training programs, that they were fine. And did fine, you know, even if they did get a little rattled. And the only problems that we can have, you know, with these pilots in Mexico are the bigotries that can be found in many, many places and attitudes north of the border.
Mm-hmm.
And which is, I mean, that's completely irrelevant. It's wrong. It's mean-spirited. And not to mention a little stupid to be thinking that way.
And that's really well said, Alfred, and that's probably the last thing you can say tonight other than good night.
Okay, good night.
Good night, Alfred Lemberg. Thank you, sir. Go visit alienview.org, or is it .net, Alfred?
.net.
.net, thank you. Alienview.net. Look at his website and the little fog whistle from down there in Alabama. We'll see you, talk to you next Saturday night. Thanks for being out there. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any questions.